Welcome to Press X to Science, the podcast where Wolfenstein meets Albert Einstein. Today we are talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly of how science and scientists are represented in video games. But before we get to that, let me introduce our regular co-hosts. First up is an actual living scientist and game developer, Phil English. Hi, Phil.
Hello.
And also joining us is another actual living scientist, well, astrophysicist, and science communicator, Tim Young. Hey, Tim.
Heyo.
If you want to learn more about our backgrounds, you can listen to our intro episode. And so let's get into it. Scientists and science are often represented in video games as the enemy or as the bad guy. And so I went Googling to see if I could find examples of scientists as characters in video games, and I came up with a long list, and lo and behold, very many of them were white, old, and male. And so I sort of categorized the games and characters into sort of the good, the bad, and the ugly, and there was, to me, there was more bad and ugly than there was good. So I thought we'd start talking about the bad and ugly first. Phil or Tim, can you list one example that you think would fall into the bad or the ugly?
Well, that's like a really easy one. You can pretty much pick from 90% of the ones that you came up with. This is a really good list, actually. I hope we have this on the website somewhere. Mm.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, I mean, you can go from... I think my favorite is controversially Professor Oak, just because... He's kind of like, I guess he's not the worst possible because he's still at least a friendly guy, but he is definitely your typical white male, you know, pretty much. I mean, he is kind of evil because he basically sends a bunch of kids out into the wild with nothing but a small level 1 Pokemon. So you could be saying he's, you know, child abuse. But I guess, yeah, any of, you know, Dr. Wily, he's an evil mad scientist. In the Mega Man series.
And they're all wearing white lab coats.
They are, yeah. It's really bad.
I sometimes wear a white lab coat just at home.
But you're just weird.
Yeah, that's just standard. That's like your, you know, if you've got a date over, you just wear the white lab coat to really get them in the mood.
Just a white lab coat and a kilt. That's it.
Yeah.
Gets the ladies every time.
There's a vision. Yeah, I mean, the white lab coat is definitely a, I don't know, it's a shortcut. For people to be able to realize, oh, hey, that's a scientist. You see it being used in real life in terms of, I don't know if you've ever walked through like a Maya or a David Jones through like the perfume section.
When you said these... Maya, I thought M-I-R-E.
Oh.
I have not walked through a Maya recently.
Yeah, not too far from the truth. But yeah, like seeing all the well, male and female, predominantly female, I should say, but perfume and makeup sellers, and they're all wearing white lab coats because that's something that people associate with science and with something that...
Well, I think, and being smart.
Yes.
And knowing what you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
But the funny thing is, I have a lot of friends who are scientists as their job, and depending on which area you're in, not many of them wear lab coats. You have to be in a very specific area of science, i.e. like your area, field chemistry, whereby you're working in a lab and you need to wear the lab coat, whereas most others... aren't in the lab and don't need to wear a lab coat, but they would wear other safety gear.
Even we don't actually wear white lab coats. We wear blue ones. So there you go. I don't actually really know the choice behind that, but there you go. So
probably
yeah,
easy,
I mean,
to launder.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, doesn't show up the stains so badly. I'm not sure.
So Phil, yours was Professor Oak. What about you, Tim?
My controversial one, I guess, for the bad scientist is, ironically, Half-Life. Because in the Half-Life games, the scientists were always kind of the good guys. They were really inept, but they were good guys. They didn't try and kill you. They didn't try and kill anything. In fact, you had to try and save them. But there was an early concept in the original Half-Life that ended up being cut and reused in Half-Life 2. And that was the only female scientist in the entire game. And she ended up being a Judas character. She ended up being a turncoat. So, spoilers. The original Half-Life...
Oh, spoilers. It's like 15 years old now.
Yeah, I don't know if we can spoil that one.
I think we're good.
In the original Half-Life, she was meant to be a female scientist that turned on the player and led the Marines to him. Mm. And in Half-Life 2, she was turned into the character of Judith Mossman. So, Judith. Like, yes. Quite literally, Judith. Judith, it's right in there.
Subtle like a sledgehammer. Yeah.
Yeah, Valve is good at that subtlety. Yeah. And so, she was meant to be this turncoat character that betrayed the main player. But she was also the only female. And to me, that was a real slap in the face of, why make the only female character the one who is a turncoat? And
I never thought about it that way.
Well, the easy answer is because she's easily identifiable. If all the scientists are male and there's one that's female, you can recognize her against all the other scientists. Mm. And therefore, when she does turn against you, it's an easy narrative hook. But it's also a lazy narrative hook.
Yes, because you're saying that all women look the same, or, you know...
Anyway. Well, we're actually saying all men look the same.
Yeah.
And therefore, you need a woman to differentiate.
Continuing on from that, though, you've got, the only kind of... there's probably one or two other, main character scientists in the game, but one of them that's very strongly identifiable is the black character, the black scientist and his daughter, Alex Vance, who end up being, main characters in the game as scientists. So they've obviously the main characters are very easily recognizable as these, I don't know, minorities, but they're used in a really not a great way.
Yeah, I mean,
you're seeing it's been an exception to the rule instead of just a part of the general group of people in the game.
Yeah.
I kind of did appreciate though, I mean, we've got to keep in mind that, and this is, the worst apologism ever, but these games came out at a time where white male privilege was crazy rampant in video games, especially during the first Half-Life, but even very much so in the second Half-Life as well. This is a time when diversity wasn't really considered important, and also, this is a gross argument as well, and I don't necessarily agree with it, but the amount of resources that you had to work with in terms of what you could fit on a disc was also limited. I know, it's the worst excuse.
That's the worst argument.
It's
excuse. I don't take that at all. The Ubisoft conjecture, which is been proven wrong on all stages.
Yeah.
Well, one of the other bad and ugly ones that I found, and I haven't played this game, it's a very old game called Sin. From 1998, whereby the villain was also a female who happened to be a scientist. She didn't wear a white lab coat. In fact, she was quite well busted.
Yeah. She wore practically nothing at all.
Yes, wore practically nothing at all. And essentially, they based her avatar on an actual Canadian adult model.
She's a real person.
She was, in fact, dominatrix.
Yeah,
just to make it even more cliched.
Very much this hourglass shape with this tiny white, worse than Barbie, you know what I mean? One of the very few examples of a woman scientist from sort of that, that early group of games, and they made her the villain, but also made her this, sexy female avatar. Anyway,
it's terrible.
Definitely for me. Yeah, it fit into the bad and ugly thing. And I was just kind of laughing at it more than anything.
You'd hope to be able to laugh this day and age. You would hope that nowadays that just wouldn't fly. And I'm not sure it would. I don't think if a game came out now, which had that character as a main character and was supposed to be a scientist, I think it would get laughed out. If it was released by a AAA,
Well, the thing is that she kind of looks almost exactly like Bayonetta.
Bayonetta's a little bit more well-dressed than that. But yes, I admit
it's not much.
Yeah. Bayonetta's pretty bad. Yeah, that's true. I haven't played those games at all, but I've certainly seen the covers.
I haven't played those games. I've just watched the YouTube Let's Plays a lot.
Yeah, I've just watched a lot of Twitch. No, that's bad.
The more I looked into it and the more I tried looking for science and scientists, it was just all negative, especially in a lot of the earlier video games. Starting off with, I've just been playing the remastered Day of the Tentacle.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back and had a look at the pictures from Maniac Mansion, which was the sort of precursor to Day of the Tentacle and the original Day of the Tentacle graphics. And a lot of the characters, like the two main characters, basically from Day of the Tentacle, Dr. Fred Edison and Bernard Bernoulli, and I love the name.
Yes.
The names. were the stereotypes, essentially. And then I did like Laverne, however, the female character in Day of the Tentacle. She wasn't, like, she seemed really ditzy, but she wasn't. Like, when you listen to what they say and how they interact, all of them are quite clever and quite funny. There's a lot of funny lines in the game. It's quite hilarious. But, yeah, the main guy is, yeah, the stereotype. So Fred Edison's, you know, balding, white hair sticking out the sides, lab coat, glasses. Bernard is glasses, high pants, pocket protector. There's jokes made about how geeky he is throughout the game. And I guess it just never moved on from there. And so that led me to start purposefully looking for some good representations of science and scientists. Not necessarily they were good characters in terms of they were good people and they did nice things, but just good as in less one-dimensional. I'll leave mine to last. Can you, Phil or Tim, name... I thought Half-Life was a okay-ish one, but now that you talked about what you said, I agree with what you were saying.
Half-Life, I think, straddles both sides of the equation. You know, they're not immune from criticism, but at the same time, they were kind of pushing the envelope at a time when no one else was trying, so you kind of have to give them a little bit of credit for that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, Tim or Phil, a good game for science and scientists?
You go first, Tim.
Well, my big one is Mass Effect. I think that Mass Effect really, really nailed it.
I thought you might.
Yeah, I know, right?
No, this is not a massive surprise.
Mass Effect is, it's got three games, first of all, so there's a lot of real estate for them to cover in terms of this. But they had scientists from every sort of part of the spectrum on it. You know, they had the Salarian scientists who were at first considered to be your Sheldons who are, you know, socially inept and kind of weird about it, but then turn out to be just, you know, it's their culture is different and what you're actually seeing is that a difference in culture. But then also turns out that they're kind of the crazy scientists because they've done some pretty horrific things that, you know, spoiler alert, have ramifications for other entire species, and a very strong narrative around eugenics, which I thought was really bold. But then on the flip side, you know, they've got the Liara Sione, who is one of the main characters that is alongside the player character, and also one of the love interests in that game, and certainly was my love interest in that game. She's an archaeologist and a language scientist, which is, I think, a really interesting take. So her whole shtick about the whole thing was that whatever you're doing, you should, one, minimize collateral damage because you're destroying the archaeology, and two, that you should not do something if it means it's going to affect the ability to do science in a place later. And that comes into a really interesting conversation that we have in the real world about our exploration of places like Mars, in that, you know, some people say we should try and terraform Mars so that we could live there and colonize it. But the flip side is if we do that, we destroy any potential native habitat for any potential microbe or, you know, microbe that may have existed at one point on the planet's surface. So it indirectly brought up a bunch of really interesting scientific moral quandaries throughout the entire course of the games that I just really appreciated.
Yeah, nice one.
Well, yeah, I thought, not being as big of a fan as you of Mass Effect, but I thought that was one series that had done it really, really well. Mm.
Yeah, I think they approach the entire scientific... Like, we've done talks about how well Mass Effect represents science, but yeah, they tend to also represent how science is performed pretty well as well.
Yeah.
So that's good. Mine, I'm going to go with... a game called Overwatch.
It's a little piece of software.
Yeah, and actually, it's really funny because Overwatch is a first-person shooter. Generally speaking, we don't associate first-person shooters with a great deal of story and character development and all that kind of stuff. And if you only played Overwatch the game, you would get almost no story about any of the characters that you're playing. And they are a wide and varied and very diverse bunch of characters.
Mm.
But the really good thing that Blizzard have done, and once again, Blizzard being Blizzard, they have copied another franchise, which was Team Fortress 2 by Valve. And Team Fortress 2 actually started to do this really...
They borrowed it.
Yeah, borrowed.
I'm sure they'll give it back.
Yeah, one day, with the millions and millions of dollars that they've earned on this game. but Valve started doing this really interesting thing with Team Fortress 2, where they actually like started doing videos and shorts and comics and stories that tied into the events of the game, and actually started giving this really bizarre, like Ren and Stimpy-esque storyline to the Team Fortress 2 characters. Now, Blizzard's done pretty much exactly the same thing. Outside of the game, you can read comics, you can buy comics, obviously. You can watch these really great animated shorts of, you know, introducing each character and all that kind of stuff. And you can read like reams and reams of fan theories and fan texts and all that kind of stuff. So one of them that I think is actually probably one of the better representations of scientists is Symmetra. Now, Symmetra in the game is an Indian-born female. She manipulates light, like hard light. It's like a fairly steady staple in science fiction is creating things out of like light that
hard
are actually
light.
Able to be
yeah
able
light.
To be yeah it's everyone should know this but they're able to be interacted with. But not only is she a female scientist from India, which is actually very important because a lot of people, especially within the academic community, you know, there's still a little bit of that resentment towards third world research kind of thing. That they, I don't know, they tend to look down on it as not being like proper because it's not, you know, being done in the major Western universities and that kind of stuff. Like there is definitely still that residual. But she's also represented as being on the autism spectrum, which is, you know, it's pretty great that Overwatch and Blizzard especially have made it so that all these different characters are representing minorities that may not see themselves in video games. Because the most important thing as a kid growing up is seeing yourself in the media, I think.
Absolutely.
And this is why it's such an important... Like, this is why there's so much push to get more females represented in media, in, you know, especially in STM, which I think we're going to be talking about in a little while. Because if you don't see yourself in media, like that's what you look up to almost. Like if you don't see someone doing the thing that you want to do, you think that you can't do it. It's a weird like self, you know, fulfilling prophecy. And so them making these characters be such interesting minorities that people that are of those minorities can latch onto, I think is extremely good and should be lauded.
I was doing some reading around that, and first off, one interesting thing I thought was that this identification and representation isn't equally important for everyone, but for those people where it is important, like you said, Phil, they need to be able to feel like they've seen themselves represented in the media, of which video games are a part, and that sort of validates their identity. And if they can't see themselves, they're like, oh, well, clearly women don't belong in science, or, you know, clearly Indian people... don't belong in science either, that sort of thing. So having these positive representations to just affirm that yes, anyone can do this, is fantastic. And the fact that now I guess video games are cluing into this and becoming more a part of this positive representations is fantastic, considering they're just so popular amongst younger players who still haven't chosen what they want to do when they leave school. It's a really good way to, I guess, show them in really subtly as well, especially with Overwatch, it's really subtle, which is what I like about it.
Yeah.
That
people can seek it out.
Yeah, you can do this too. And it's not in your face. We're going to put a female in there just for the sake of having a female.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I'm
almost of the opinion that characters, unless there's a specific reason for them having a specific identity characteristic, whether that be race or gender or whatever, you should be able to roll a dice and the character should still be able to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that happened with a lot of the characters in Overwatch. Like, there was never any indication before, a month or two ago, that Tracer was a lesbian in the game. But it came through the you know, additional information that was in the comics and all that kind of stuff. They never hit it. They never smashed you in the face with it, which is what a lot of, you know, TV, film, and video games to a certain extent do, is just, oh, we've got this lesbian character. Look, she's a lesbian.
We love
lesbians. We're all about lesbians. Like,
we know you guys love lesbians.
Yeah, it would be really horrible if they did that. But the way that they did it in a really touching story, actually, you should go and read the comic if you haven't.
Yeah.
It's a light touch, and I think that's very important as well, because if it was just smashed in your face, people would react badly to it, I feel.
And that's, one of the reasons why I feel like Mass Effect got a bit of a bad rep with Liara on that one, because she was the, big scare quotes, bisexual option in the romance. Mm. And everyone was like, well, you know, they've made a female character that's bisexual, but not a male character that's bisexual, which also wasn't true. But it was actually made very, very apparent through all the different story pieces and dialogue choices that the whole Asari race was not gendered. She's not a lesbian. She's a parasite, essentially. she creates symbiotic connections with any race and utilizes their DNA or whatever, you know, genomic structure that they have to make their own race more diverse, essentially.
Mm.
So it was, it didn't rely on having that, you know, crass, oh, look at the lesbians, guys. Everyone loves lesbians. It was actual story, and it had meaning, and it had reason behind it. And I felt that was really, really well done, and it was kind of appreciative.
Yeah.
I know this isn't science-based, but I think that's why I really liked Gone Home. Mm. I actually thought it was like this spooky, creepy horror thing feel to it, and I was, you know, constantly looking behind me, waiting for something to jump out, a sort of deal. But, you know, as the story unfolds, they've put those clues there on purpose to mislead you, but as the story unfolds, sorry, spoilers, you know, you find out she's sort of falling in love with this friend from school, and it's just this love story, and it, you know, it doesn't matter that they're both female. That's just how it is.
Exactly.
But, like, they could have been two males, two females, or a male, a female. The game still would have worked really well. And it was very subtle. Yeah. I really liked how they sort of added that touch to it. It was really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I'm actually really, really looking forward to Fulbright, who made Gone Home. They're actually making a game called Tacoma, which seems to be set in, like, a sci-fi universe. So I'm really interested to see what they do with that and how they're going to represent scientists. So which scientist did you like, Megan?
Well, I liked Overwatch, but you stole that one from
me. Oh, sorry.
but that's okay. One of the ones I played a little while ago was the new reboot of Tomb Raider. And I had played the old one on PlayStation, you know, the old polygon one. Yeah.
Yep.
Not talking about that one, just the new ones were fantastic as a game. Like, the game was done really well. I finished it, which is, you know, good that it is finishable. But it told more about, I guess, her story and why she's interested in these things. And you can see her, I guess, because it's at the start of her journey, she struggles with some of the things and you have trouble doing a few bits and pieces. She's not an all-powerful superhero.
Yeah.
She's just a person who happens to like archaeology and discovering things and that sort of stuff, and she gets thrown into this sort of this island and she's got to try and get off in the first one. And so I really liked it was just her as a character, and that's just happened to be what she was interested in. It wasn't in your face, you know, she's a female scientist, everyone look.
Yeah.
Or she doesn't wear a lab coat, she just wears what you wear in an expedition sort of deal. And I really liked that representation and that game. Like, the game was just amazing.
Yeah.
And I think the other one that I like, well, there's two, Civilization series because science is a way to win.
Yeah.
You know, it's seen as a valid thing to invest your time and money in order to develop new technologies and things for your civilization. And you can win by being the most technologically advanced.
Mm.
In all the other sort of games like Age of Empires and that sort of thing, you win by waging war and killing everyone else, basically.
I feel a little bit like Civilization. Yes, there's a science victory, but the science victory is all about scientific superiority over the battlefield.
True.
Even when you reach the science victory, it's like, well, you have all the fucking tanks that shoot lasers now. Well done.
But you don't have to go and wipe everyone else off the face of the earth to win the game. Same, yes. Like, and there's multiple routes to victory, not just the science victory.
I actually think Civilization did a really good job with the diplomatic victories, where it wasn't about dominance, it was about consensus and sort of getting nations to agree with one another on things. That was a really interesting one as well.
But I just liked that it wasn't good, it wasn't bad, but it was just there, it was a thing, it was valuable.
Yeah.
If you wanted to pursue it, and you didn't have to. And then my favorite, obviously, the Portal series.
Mm.
And I know that the AI, so GLaDOS is, you know, and Wheatley in the second one are seen as being evil. But I just like the, I guess, the backstory and the setting and, you know, the idea that we would have been, you know, someone has set up this Aperture Industries whereby we test people on their intelligence or whatever it is that we're trying to test for with these test chambers. And Shell just happens to be the character that you are when you wake up, and she's sort of stuck in the dilapidated building and you've got to try and get out by solving all the puzzles. Yeah, I really like that representation of science, and it was sort of science gone wrong, but not in a completely catastrophic way.
Yeah, and the fact as well that you kind of have to do the scientific method to pass the game. Like, it's not just, you know, shooting or anything like that. It's about learning through mistakes and trying things out without having, you know, a lot of instruction a lot of the time, which I thought was really quite positive. And that's, I think, I'm curious about you guys. What kind of games to you were games that had science represented, but also I think that made you think positively of the scientific method as it was being employed in the game?
The Witness.
The Witness. Yeah,
I really like The Witness.
Sorry.
My favorite types of games at the moment are the ones with those where you're learning by the feedback loops. You're not learning by being told the rules and how to play. You're having to figure it out for yourself. You know, and everyone's experience of the game is always different. And so I really felt like I couldn't talk to you two about The Witness until after you'd played it, because I didn't want to ruin your experience of learning through that feedback.
I get that.
I would say the Dark Souls series as well is very scientific method-y, because you start that game and it's unlike any other game that would be currently on the market at the moment. Probably there's going to be a bunch of, you know, imitators at some point very soon. But Dark Souls is so different and so difficult, and so you need to, every enemy that you come up to, you need to learn how they move, what they're vulnerable to, like when to dodge and all that kind of stuff. And because the game is so deliberately paced, it's like a very slow moving game compared to a lot of action RPGs anyway. It does feel a lot like, when you first run into like the very first enemy in the game, it's entirely possible to die. You just have to go, I died. That's not supposed to happen on the first enemy. And that kind of sets you up to go, okay, well, I really need to study this enemy and actually learn how they work and what their weaknesses are and how I'm actually going to approach every single one of the battles in this game. And it really makes you think and apply that scientific method of, well, I think I can do it this way. Let's try it out. And then you die and you're like, okay, well, that didn't work. What's the next thing that I can try?
That said, it was also a game where you weren't, like, a lot of games that try that, when you die the first time, you just think, well, I'm shit. I guess I wasn't good enough to beat that boss. You don't think, okay, I'm doing it wrong, I should employ the scientific method. I think Dark Souls was very, very well designed in that respect, that made you want to try again because you felt like there was something else you could have done.
Well, I guess you build your skill in playing that game by failing multiple times and figuring it out. And I think that reminds me of Spelunky.
Yeah.
It was a cute representation of, I guess, archaeology and digging in things, but
That is not how you should do archaeology.
But you essentially had to build up my skill at playing that game in order to get to the boss level. And it's crazy hard because every time the level's randomized every time you go down, every time you die. So you have to learn like how to dodge or kill enemies and get around obstacles, because the next time you go down, it won't be the same. There'll be the same enemies and obstacles, but they'll be arranged differently.
Yeah, completely different.
And it's, you cannot pass like the first level even without dying a few times.
You slowly learn the mechanics of the enemies and the objectives, but you're always placed in this new and interesting like environment to explore.
There's like four worlds, and each world as you get through has different enemies and obstacles and things. So once you get through the first one and you go, all right, yeah, I'm getting good at this, you go back to dying all over again because the second world's really different.
Yeah exactly.
All right, well, I think that wraps it up. I feel like we could talk about this forever.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a second episode. Yeah,
we haven't even mentioned Kerbal Space Program yet.
No. Oh, my goodness, no. I think we have mentioned it previously.
That is true.
But thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the web at pressx2.science and on Facebook as facebook.com/pressxtoscience. We would really appreciate it if you could share through the podcast, through social media or word of mouth, and rate us up on iTunes with 5 stars if you enjoyed the podcast. Also, feel free to send us in any questions, comments or feedback to questions@pressx2.science. And we'll put up on the website that list of characters with their pictures and what games they were from that we were I put together for the episode, so you can have a look too. And I'm sure there's a lot more that I've left out, so maybe you can let us know if you think of any that's not on our list. And from the three of us, we'll talk to you soon.